Hello, welcome to where we explore inspiring journeys and transformative stories that empower us to live our best lives. I'm your host, your forever dreamer, Teresa. And today I'm thrilled to introduce you to my next guest who embodies the essence of personal growth. Meet Shadevi, the owner and creator of Being You. Shadevi's journey is a testament to evolution and reinvention. Starting her career as an architect, she transitioned into the fields of behavior analysis and special education, ultimately finding her true calling as a certified health and life coach. I'm sure the path wasn't always smooth, and like many of us, Shadevi has encountered her fair share of challenges and moments of self-doubt. Yet, through it all, she has learned not only to embrace her obstacles, but to use them as stepping stones toward what truly matters in life. As a health coach, Shadevi is passionate about helping others look fit and feel fabulous by focusing on transforming her clients' relationships with food and shifting their mindsets. Her evidence-based, culturally sensitive approach has made a significant impact, especially among women seeking to manage stress and enhance their quality of life across various domains, be it relationships, career, health, or spirituality. Beyond coaching, Shadevi is also an author and podcaster, sharing her insights through engaging conversations that resonate with audiences around the globe, which we all know is something very near and dear to my heart. Today, we're going to dive deep into Shadevi's philosophy of being you, explore her journey, and learn how she empowers others to embrace their authentic selves. So without further ado, let's welcome Shadevi to the show. Hello, Shadevi. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Teresa. I loved that introduction. It was so lovely. Thank you so much.
Oh, well,
It's a
thank
pleasure to be
you.
here.
I'm so glad you're here. Thank you. And for embracing me with your presence, because I know that we spoke before, we've spoken a few times since recording this, and I thought what you embody is the coolest. And I thought what you do is cool. And to go shift from something like IT, for example, to this is just such a huge, it's just such a huge jump. So tell me, tell our listeners, what was that like? What made you want to move from such an analytical situation to behavioral analytics?
Honestly, that was a choice that was not given to me. It was forced on me, being an architect. So I grew up in India, and my dad wanted me to either pursue engineering or medicine. So those are two options. So I thought the lesser of the two evils was engineering, and then architecture sounded cool because I loved drawing, art, creativity. So it had that elements to it. So I decided I would pursue architecture. But even in high school, I really wanted to pursue psychology. I was always fascinated by behavior, like why people do the things they do. I always, at a very young age, always was interested in that. And I did kind of hint it to my dad, which was kind of like, no, if you work with, I don't want to use the terms he exactly said, which is taboo today, but he said, if you work with such and such people, you'll become such and such a
Old
person.
school. Old school mentality. Yes.
Visualize the words you could have used. So I do not want to say it on a podcast, but okay, so that was shut down. So I did my bachelor's in architecture in India, and I moved back here to the US to my master's. And I thought, okay, I just will embrace what was given to me, and you know, this is my path, and just make the best of it, right? That's one way to do it. But I realized I was unhappy. I was so unhappy that I used to come literally crying sometimes because I hate was a strong word, but I really did not enjoy it at all. Though however hard I tried to embrace it and I worked towards it, it was not fitting my personality or who I am. I could feel it in my bones. And
You
by
weren't
during
feeling
this,
passionate about it.
no, I was not. It was, yeah. So even though I've been in the field for 10 years nearly with education and working through it, I didn't feel comfortable. Anyway, during that course of time, I got married. I had my 2-year-old son, and then we moved to the U to London, UK, because my husband at that time wanted to switch careers, knew exactly what he wanted to do. So we went to London, and he wanted to do his MBA, which seemed like a great transition point for me to stop and reflect on what I wanted to do, because that was a clean, like a very natural, organic shift that happened. I took that time to self-reflect and think about what I wanted to do. And I started slow. I said, let me take some classes in psychology. Let's go to the university. You know, you can sit in. And I loved it. I just loved the classes I took. So I did enroll in a full-time program, a master's program in developmental psychology. It was in the Freud Center. So it was all about, it was amazing. It was where Freud, you know, when he moved from Austria, that's his house. So I had it in his house. It was amazing. So I did that. And then we moved back to the U.S. But for some reason, I love psychoanalysis. I love thinking about the subconscious and stuff. But somehow my brain had been tuned so to be so analytical that I needed some, data. You know, I needed something to show that people, there's change, positive change happening in people's lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So but I still wanted to be in the field of psychology or helping people. So I then discovered behavior analysis, which is the scientific-based method of working with people to change behavior. Right. So I then became a board certified behavior analyst. And I started working with kids, mostly neurodivergent kids, autistic kids, and kids with learning disabilities and their parents in a home clinical setting. I worked in a school setting. I love the school setting. So I did get my master's in special ed. So I'm a K-12 special educator as well. And I loved working with a mixed wide range of kids because school setting, it's so much more fun because you have kids with all kinds of needs. Yeah. You're not working with a specific niche of kids. We're working with all kinds of needs. And there's
that exposure. It's that exposure.
Yeah, a lot of exposure. Yes. And it was a great experience for me and the kids. I worked a lot with the kids. And most of the kids I worked with had like a lot of challenging behaviors. Like they had needs, which were, you know, parents were struggling with.
Right.
And parents used to come and say, hey, can you work with my kid? You know, they're struggling with challenging behaviors. But I've also realized when parents are involved, more involved in the process, it was more impactful for the kids. There are situations where parents are like, just take care, fix this problem, you know? And how is that even possible? You know, your child spends 98% of the time with you, more than 99%, and 1% of the time with your educator or teacher. Okay. And it seemed like it's so crucial that the parents need the skills more than the kids.
Of
the parents
course.
Need the tools more than the kids. So, but that was, I felt like a gap in the system because the way, like all these kids have insurance-based like services. So they
right.
cover the needs of the kids and not the parents, right? And parents' involvement is not as much. So I was like, okay. So I started my private practice last year with the vision of helping parents so that I can do it on my own terms and help parents. I still do work with individuals who have like anxiety, autism, OCD, but also with their parents. So I have this caveat, like if I'm going to work with your kids, I'm going to work with you. It's a package deal.
Agreed.
So I didn't. Yeah. So and sometimes I just work with parents. A lot of my clients are just parents. And when I say parents, it's mostly moms. And I say moms, they're mostly working moms.
You know, I've said it before in other shows. That's always a dominant parent. Doesn't matter what the situation is. It's true. It's true. Yeah.
It's true. Just a pattern which I observed. And yeah, so during that course, I realized moms, especially professional moms, they already have so much on their plate. They're busy, they're working, and then they're taking care of their family. And then especially add extra layers of needs when your child has those needs.
Yes.
It's a lot on their plate.
Yes.
And I realized that even when I was telling them what to do, they don't have the energy or they were kind of going and they don't. It's
exhausting.
It's exhausting. So and they always are giving and they're not taking care of themselves. So another piece which I kind of realized. So and I'm a mom as well. And I'm in my, you know, I have two kids. So I was like, I was in this health and fitness journey as well for my own mental health.
Right.
And I realized that this is something which is helpful for me. So I did get my health and life coach certification while I was working here with the kids and the parents. And I was like, this is amazing because I feel so much. I've helped a couple of women during the course of the program. And I was like, this is amazing. I really feel like it's making a difference to their mental health and how they respond to their kids as well. So that's where my journey is. It's not that this or that. I still, like I said, I still work with the kids, but my journey now is to help women, especially in their 40s. So high working moms in their 40s who want to, I call it, look fit and feel fabulous without this extreme dieting, extreme insane workouts, taking weight loss pills, feeling miserable, but right. just changing their relationship with food. The way shifting their mindset and moving towards what is important to them, because those are the key skills I teach parents and kids anyway. It's just shifted towards health and fitness.
See, and I think the fact that you do all of that, I really never would even have thought to put all of that together. Now, we know that one, if you're a working parent, first of all, if you're a parent just in general,
yeah,
if you have kids who do not have special needs,
yeah,
it's hard. It's exhausting. Whether you work or you're stay at home, it's on a whole nother level. There is always a dominant parent, whether it's a single parent household or a double parent, or in some cases they got four or five people and generations yeah. living in these houses too. It's really hard because you also have the mentalities. You have different mentalities of how parenting should go to mm-hmm. kids without special needs. When you have a kid with special needs, I know we spoke that I just found out my son has like a touch of AD, I want to say ADD, not ADHD, because he's not hyperactive, mm-hmm. right? And it's just the way he learns. Like he's just mm-hmm. starting to, he's learning a little different, and we're starting to get him some intervention with that. And that was one of the main reasons when I caught your story. I thought it was really cool because me, all these years, I have a very short fuse. I was raised very, very, very strict, right? And I always said, I'm not going to raise my kids that way. And I've been very good about mm-hmm. that. But I've always tried to pride in myself that I try to do better. And I
yes.
do less than better more times than I like, you know? Yes. And for all the years that like he would throw a fit or he would do something, I would try, you know, you lose your patience. It's so yeah. easy to lose your patience. And you're like, what am I doing wrong as a parent? Why yeah. can't I, as a mom, reach out to my child? Why can't I take care of the situation? We know that consequences aren't helping. We know that threatening mm-hmm. is not helping. You know, we know that just telling them down sometime is not yeah. helping, right? So it's so important. The well-rounded way that you are approaching this, because mm-hmm. I always said, for me, the best thing, I've said it in other episodes, I've said it in one that I was just on recently, that for me, the only way that I can sometimes regulate my mental, not just by doing some other self-care things that I do, mm-hmm. is by exercise. It helps keep me a little more even keeled. Could yes. be that I'm also too exhausted from exercising to even care what's going on.
You're in Zen mode.
That's why I just worked out really hard. You do whatever the hell you want to yeah. do. Whatever, you know, I'm going to go sit in my room kind of thing. It's a possibility as well. But I think that looking at a woman's, and again, not just a woman, but in general, in this particular case, looking at a woman's role in her own self-care trickles down completely to the rest of her family and the rest of her life. Yes. And parents are involved. Parents, mothers, they have to be involved in their children's lives. You know, we know from older generations, that wasn't a thing, right? Yeah. That wasn't really, it was kind of like you were there to be seen, not to be heard. You were there to be very strict in what you were going to do with yourself. You know, it was going to be either college or it was going to be very, you had a plan from the time you were born. Your parents mm-hmm. had a plan, and it's just what it was. And you kind of stuck with that. You know very well. You just talked about it. You know, you kind of stuck it regardless of what it is that you wanted. And I think now we're trying to show our kids that we can do things different, which is why I think it's taking us into our 40s to do these, to learn to do this. I say newly in my 40s, I'm like, everything from my body's changed very differently. Mm-hmm. My mental has changed, but I've also changed.
Yeah.
Trying to be more cognizant of it and take care of myself in different ways, you know, because, you know, people say it, and I've had people tell me before, wait till you hit your 40s. And I was like, oh, come on. Yes, us 40 something year olds look way better than other generations. Let's not lie now. Like, we must be some conservatives from the 80s and 90s.
But for sure. Yeah.
They preserved this pretty well. They did. But we're trying to break those curses and those generational traumas so that we can
take
our kids. And that means taking care of ourselves first and not killing ourselves, you know, in everything. So, how is it for you? And I think this is really important in not just in your line of work, but in any line of work for a woman, you know, transitioning into a different role, whatever age it may be, can be very daunting. Yeah. You know, it can be very daunting. And sometimes these things take a life of their own. So how do you not just find that work-life balance with this new world of technology and having to content create and post, but how do you separate yourself, your personal self? How do you not let your personal self get swallowed into this other identity, or how do you meld them together?
Yeah. That's a very good question. And I'm going to say, be honest and say it's a work in progress.
Yeah, like we all are. Yeah.
Yes. At least have boundaries between work and, you know, situations. But sometimes it does, I do sometimes see it kind of spills over a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because at this point of time, like you said, when you're shifting to something new, and I've shifted a couple of times, and I'm, you know, there's always like, am I doing the right thing? Right? Is this the path I need to go? And where is this path going to take me? But I realized like that was kind of eating into my personal time. I was kind of preoccupied with those pieces. Mm-hmm. Then I realized it's not just because of my experience and background. Sometimes I just pause and I took a step back and I realized, you know, it's not helpful. It's not helping me in my career being so preoccupied with my thoughts, and it's not helping me. I'm not present. I'm not in the present moment for my kids.
Right.
So that then I realized, and my daughter just said that one day. She's like, you always look like you're thinking about something. I realized what she said. And I mean, we learn from our children as well. So I told her, yes, I'm sorry if I was preoccupied. I'll try to be more present for you and pay attention to you when you talk to me. So acknowledging is one big piece. Awareness is another big piece. I think some of us are not aware of things blending in. So I think being aware is the great first step.
Agreed. It's very hard to do. It's very hard to not have 32,000 thoughts at one time.
Yes.
Yeah. And only 2 ears.
Exactly.
Because, you know, when you got more than one kid, there is always one talking in each ear, and it can go in one and right out the other. And you're kind of like, I'm looking at you. Yes. I have no idea what you just said.
What you said. Yes. And it's hard. And again, another piece is like, we're all human, and we know parenting is hard. Like any for everybody, it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, there's no manual.
There's no return policy.
There's no refunds. Exactly. There's no refunds. You're stuck.
That's it. That's the lot you get. That's what you get.
That's what you get. This is the package you got. No returns. Keep it.
That's right.
So yeah, it's just that awareness. And I learn. I can't. It's a trial and error. Every day for me is a trial and error. And I give. And I feel like I'm more compassionate to myself. Like I don't beat myself up. I'm like, there are days when I had thought before, like I should know better. I'm in this field. I help parents. I should know better, right? As a parent. But then I tell myself, I had a hard day. Today was a rough day. And I have to give myself some grace. It's okay. It wasn't the best situation. I could have handled it better. But I'm just going to be okay. I did it. It's done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, being kind to myself. And then next day is a new day. And I will look at it differently. And look at it from a different point of view. So that's typically, and like I said, it's a day by day, step by step journey, because this is a new area for me as well. So I'm still, it's not a very organic feel. Like I'm, like you said, creating content, creating a website. You know how podcasts are. I was like, and it seems so cool. I'm like, oh my God, this is so much work.
It's so much work. And there is so many nuances to it that you never could think about ahead of time. Yes. Yes.
Tech person. I'm like, this is ridiculous. But then I'm like, I've already chosen this path and it'll get easier. Right now, it's not as easy as I want it to be. So there is that cross piece of me trying to figure it out. And I have a very supportive partner who's been balancing it out for me because he understands I'm trying really hard. I'm working very hard on this. So I'm more than I would want to at this point. But I feel like the next 6 months, I'll be at a place where everything is smoother, less crankier and frustrated. But I try my best not to take it on the family. Like it's my bubble of work. And I try. And if I yell, I'm like, okay, I apologize later to my family. And then I always give them a reason so they know. I always tell them if I'm upset, I said, I was very upset today and I shouldn't have taken it out on you, but this and this happened. And it's not an excuse. And you kept asking me 5 times. And I told you I will get to you after I'm done. You did not listen. And it made me really upset. And so that they understand, okay.
I feel that because I try to be very transparent too, because we have the tendency, you know, I saw a meme that it still makes me laugh, but it says, I mean, essentially, it says a mom will, you know, her kids think they're crazy because she'll blow up, scream. But nobody thought about the first 927 times that I asked you, not that I asked you, you know, to chill out or whatever, something to that extent. It was just like, you know, why does it take me 927 times to ask you to do something before I blow up? Then it's like, whoa, why is mom blowing up at me? Well, hello. Right. Yeah. Like, it's like, because how many times did I ask you nicely the same thing, you know, and it's like, I'm not the crazy one here. I know I'm not the crazy one, but I think a lot of it is, you know, it's that constant push and pull of these people who are developing their own personalities. Well, we are trying to still learn who we want to be. We are, you know, and who we're meant to be, you know, I understand that as well. I was never meant to be this techie person. I'm still not. Mm-hmm. I work into this is not, I fell into it. Eight years ago, never felt comfortable enough or confident enough in my skills. Yeah. People have told me, oh no, you're great at your job. That's great. But it doesn't fulfill me.
Yes.
It just doesn't fulfill me. Now, I never knew what would fulfill me. You know what I mean? Yeah. So this whole podcasting journey the past couple of years for me has felt fulfilling in its own way, right? Because it's, you know, again, you know how hard it is to work. I'm going to say more than one job in any direction because a full-time job in itself, right? Being able to have a full-time job and do a part-time job and try to find something that might be your passion and working toward that. And in this world that's changing, this world is not really, this tech world now with this content stuff, it's not made for women our age and older because it is complicated. Like you have to learn this stuff from elementary school in order to be able to do some of the stuff that TikTok alone wants you to do, you know.
Yes.
I don't even have that much creativity in my head to come up with some of the stuff that, you know, you need to.
Yes, I, like one of the things I first started, someone asked me, do you have an email list? Do you have a lead magnet? Do you have a CT? I was like, wait, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Yeah. I don't have any leads. I just put my face on the screen and I hope someone says something, but I don't know, you know, exactly. It's, there's so many steps and those crazy, like I went to business school 20 years ago, you know what I mean? And it's the whole world is completely different from them. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's really, it is really hard sometimes not to lose yourself in that process as well. And not to give up, you know, like you had said, there are some nights I lay down and I'll lay down in my bed and I'll just, I'm there by myself. I lay there. And I just lay there sometimes at night and I'm just looking at the ceiling and I'm like, all right, well, thank God we got through another day. You know? It wasn't perfect. I wasn't perfect. My family wasn't perfect, but we're here. Mm-hmm. And like you said, one day at a time, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I always say a year from now, like you said, 6 months, I'm always like a year from now, my life is going to look very different. And I put that out every night. You know, I give myself that grace and that time because I believe putting it out there, like you did as well with the 6 months is really makes a difference. You got to put the work in. Like we always say, some people say things are supposed to be given to me. Absolutely not. You put the work in and it does make a huge difference. So emotional intelligence, most people don't have, they're not used to using it. It's not something we're obviously raised with, but you know, when we're in the, I'll say techie world, I know you were in architecture, but that's all still techie in the sense that that's very structured. What have you learned about balancing logic with emotional intelligence? Because that's sometimes really hard as well. And how do you teach parents that we, you know, to be more, a little more emotional intelligent when it comes to parenting our children and ourselves?
Yeah, it's that's a very full loaded question, right? All of us, I believe, maybe I'm not a scientist or a thing, but I believe all of us are born with an innate temperament. Like some of us have more logic. And some of us are more like the EQ is higher than the IQ. I think we're born with that. And then obviously through nurture, we nurture one or the other. But I feel like innately, I know some people are so logical, analytical, but they have no empathy. Like
no personal skills at all.
No personal skills, no social skills. And it's like, I'm personally, I feel I'm a more emotional, my emotional equivalent is quotient is higher than my intelligent quotient or my analytical quotient.
Mine too.
So that kind of tells, I think that kind of was an indication of where I wanted to be. Like I'm a people person. Like I realized from a very young age, I love talking to people. I'm a listener. I love listening to people. Yeah. I don't want to like flaunt. I don't want to talk about like facts and this is this and have strong opinions. I'm willing to listen and listen to other people's opinion, like their point of view, but I never have very strong opinions on things, because for me, it's about everyone is entitled to what their thoughts and feelings. I mean, what their views on the world are, things are, and I may not agree with them completely, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to go in, but because I take it to the next level and say, okay, I see where this person's coming from. I get it. I don't agree with it, but okay, that's his point of view.
Right.
And then move on. I do not argue with that unless it's needed, but if someone asks my opinion, I say that's not what my opinion is. But the thing is, I feel like I have that higher EQ, and even though I know they're the individuals with lower EQ, we can nurture that skill. It doesn't come naturally, though. Right. It's not a natural, organic thing.
Right.
So for people who don't have that high EQ, especially I'm talking about parents, who have these strict rules.
Right.
This is the way it has to be, because this is the way I want it to be, right? And then they're not, and then I don't know, but I hate it when my kid is engaging in challenging behaviors. I want him to stop. And that is your job. That's, I'm trying to say, that is your job to help to make him stop, to get him to make him stop. And I'm like, okay, so that's a very hard thing. So what I, in those situations do is we talk about what is, all of us have values, right? All of us have something right. that's important to us. Be it a person who is more logical, who is more emotional. We have values, and then we talk about what is important for you and your family. And even for this situation, like, what is important for you and your son? What do you want from him to stop acting out? What do you want? What do you want in this relationship? And I keep using the word relationship. I said, yeah, I want him to listen to me. Okay. What does listening mean? Like, do you want him to, you know, have a strong relationship with you? Do you want to love you? Do you want to, what does that mean? What does listening mean? So yeah. I always put it on them. And when you put more and more open-ended questions and make them think a little bit more, they say, yeah, I want to have a good relationship with him. Yeah. We want to do things together because now it's hard. Okay.
That's different than just listening and do what I say.
Yes.
That's two different things. That's a really good distinction and a distinctive question to ask, because it could be misinterpreted. That's a really good one. Yes. I wouldn't even have thought of that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly. So all of us think so differently, right? So that's why that's one of the learnings I had to do, is we all have our individual identities and beliefs as human beings, which are so different. So we might think this is what they need to do. Like, that's what I would do, right? I mean, but then in their minds, that is not what they would do. That is not what they want to do. And that is not what's important to them. So the more we talk about it and us asking them like more open-ended questions, it brings out, and I'm like, okay, I would never have done that, but it makes sense to you. And it seems like it's a path that you can go on. And I help you, guide you, give you the tools and strategies to guide you on that path.
Let me ask you that then. I didn't mean to necessarily cut you off there, but that was kind of a good segue to my next question. Exactly. Was what are some of the tools that you may give parents for children that, and I hate to say this, so I'm gonna say a little more difficult, because we know there's special needs. There's so many levels of difficulty, right? Yeah. Like, for example, again, with my son, he's a really good boy. He's a really good boy. He does listen well. He's not hyperactive. He's not out there doing crazy things, but he can have a little temper on him.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes you don't know, you know, sometimes it worries me. I'm like, I don't know when it's going to come out. Other times he's very, very shy. You know what I mean? So what are some, depending upon, I guess, when you meet with a parent and or meet with the child and both, what are some of the tools you might use or have the parents learn to help navigate the differences of all these kids?
Yeah, that's exactly hard to do. But again, it depends on the kid, because every kid and needs are different. So the tools and the strategies we work with the parents look very different as well. One of the things we talk about is we talked about the values. What do you want? What is important for your kid? Like, let's use the same example. I want to strengthen the relationship with my child, and he's having these challenging behaviors. Then we look at, when does he have these challenging behaviors? Because when parents talk to us, I never hear the context. Like you said, right? The 900 times a person says something, and the 1000th time you only see that, and that's what is being relayed to me.
Yeah.
Right? That's the 1000th time is what has been relayed to me as a parent. Like, I told him to do something, he didn't do it, I screamed, you know, like whatever, and he got into this tantrum. So I always ask the context. So what happened before? what are the situations that happened before? And then let's see how we could have handled it differently. I'll give you an example. For example, say your mom's coming home for work. I use the same example. I love it. She's had a tired day from work. She's exhausted.
Because that's every day.
Every day, right? So that's, mom, tired that's mom every day. From work. Yeah. And then you walk in and you see a pile of Legos just by the entranceway. When you walk in, there's this pile of Legos. Okay, a couple of things.
Or here. Shoes, because that's my biggest.
Or shoes.
A pile yes. of shoes and socks, yes.
Or a school bag or whatever. Let's do that, okay? You walk in, you're upset. So, and then you, what's the first, we either have a knee-jerk reaction, we're human, like, John, come up and clip up, how many times blah, 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 pick up your shoes, blah, blah, okay?
I'm going to kill myself in these shoes walking in this house. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
I wish I was living in next door house. That house always clean. God knows.
Yeah, it's probably true.
Yes. But you see a loop, a cyclic pattern here. Every day you do the same thing over and over again. Every day shoes are there. Every day you're screaming. And after that, the shoes are back in its spot, right? They're all the thing. It's not like a day, the next day you come in and everything's perfect.
Yeah, it's Groundhog Day.
So obviously that strategy is not working. Mm. It's an unworkable strategy, right? So what can you do instead? So first, like I talked about, the first step, which is the hardest step, is awareness. Like, so when I walk in to the door, I see the mess, my nerve is twitching. And then I take a deep breath and I pause. Just pause for 5 seconds and be aware, which means that, okay, I had a really, really hard time at work. Yes, this mess is really annoying me at this point. But either I'm just going to go to my room. I need a few minutes, take a deep breath and come back, or whatever you need at that moment. Because one thing is like, it's a two-way street. How we respond, how our kids respond is based on their experiences and our experiences as well.
Right.
Right. Like when we are in a good space of mind, when we respond to our kids, it's very different from the way when we are tired and exhausted. It's very different. So first of all,
and it's different how they're going to respond to us, right? Like, yes, it's when, yes agreed.
Yeah, so that is the one piece. And then coming back, and then again, then you're in a much more calmer state of mind at that point. So you're coming back, and then you see the shoes and things there, and then you call your son in and say, okay, in a nice calm voice, like, can you put your shoes and backpack away or whatever things away? And these are your choices. Once we do it, we can do something fun together. Or when you have, you change your tone of voice, it actually mirrors there. It's the energy. I won't say energy, but it calms them down.
But actually, I do agree. It's energy, exactly, because I always think what you put out is what you're gonna get. So if you're putting out that they can feel that, right? It's kind of like they say when you're pregnant, your baby can feel, and when you're and you're even when you're holding, your baby can feel how you feel. Yeah. So they would say if you have a screaming baby, maybe you need to take a step back.
Yes,
and calm down, because they feel that. So I understand completely. Yes.
Yeah, so that's one way. And then you're more calm, you're more patient. Like, he might say no, and then you can give a reasoning, like, say, hey, bud, there's a reason why I'm asking you to put your shoes and things. There's a space for everything. You want to have a clean house. And it's just to get the reasoning of why you want it in its spot. Like, we don't want to walk in. It's hard for me every day, tired from work, when I walk in and I see shoes and your backpack in the front of the door. It just makes me really sad.
Right.
That's there.
So one thing that I know that I completely agree with you on is speaking to them like they're like humans.
Yes. Like, have a conversation.
Have a conversation. Yeah. Because I know, again, like we talked about, we're in a weird generation because we were not necessarily, some of us were raised by boomers, right? Others were some a little younger, maybe older Gen X, right? Yeah. And they were raised very, very hard. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then we were raised very hard. And again, it wasn't about necessarily most of us, unless your parents were hippies. I know mine weren't. It wasn't talk about your feelings. It was you're a child. Yes. Your feelings don't matter. Maybe not saying it out loud, but that was kind of the idea. You know what I'm saying? It was like, do as I say. I said, put your shit away. And deal with the consequences. And they didn't speak to us necessarily like we had feelings or like we were people. So a big thing I've always tried to talk about is try to talk to your kids like they're people, because that's how they're able to respond better. So that's kind of the thing, right? Like, explain to them. You don't got to give them all the information. But I'm open with my kids. You know, if we're struggling with money, I'm going to tell you we're struggling, because I want you to understand things don't just come to us. You know, things don't just come to mommy. You know what I mean? Things like, there are reasons I feel a certain way, and it's okay to feel a certain way. But we also still have that parent-child divide where you have to still do as I say, you know, mm-hmm. you know, and so that's kind of what you're speaking of. I want to say that's what I feel like you're kind of speaking of.
Yes, that exactly. I mean, they feel like they respect it too, right? Like, okay, mom respects me and she's treating me like a person, like a human being. And I completely agree. I mean, we need to have firm boundaries and choices. And that's another thing. Like, if you choose this path of I've been nice, I've talked about it, and you choose this path of not listening, of which the path of negative, we say time negative consequences, so your actions have consequences. But if you choose this path of putting your shoes and book bag away, yes, we can have a wonderful dinner today together. I was planning to go, you know, we can go out together in the weekend. But if you do not choose to put your backpack and this, you're not going to get any of these stuff. I'm sorry. Right? You're losing out on stuff. You're losing out on stuff because I explained to you that I'm sad. I'm tired. And I asked you to put your stuff away. And I said, okay, maybe I can help you a little bit. But that was a choice I gave you, but you decided not to do that. Right? You decided to take this path. And so, unfortunately, since we did not follow this path, these are the whatever, not even a punishment. You don't get to do fun stuff because, you know, it's a two-way street. It's a relationship. When I listen to you, you need to listen to me. And it's not listening, but it's like a collaboration.
Right.
Like it's a partnership. It's a collaboration. It's like we're a team. So one of my team players is not doing it, I'm sorry, then my other team player, I'm not going to be part of this team, right? And
yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, so because you said something that made me think about this, when you said negative consequences, I remember what exactly how you worded it, but I've seen so many parent, I'll say coaches, right? Mm-hmm. Who say that, oh, when they're acting bad, ignore it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm very blessed. I don't have kids that have ever been bad. You know what I mean? So I don't know what. I watch a lot of Special Victims Unit, you know, like Law and Order.
I love it.
It's one of my favorites. I've seen every 26 seasons, probably a thousand episodes, a thousand times. Yeah. Right? But like you see some kids in there and you're like, yo, that's a bad kid. Like there's something seriously wrong there. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's like genetically something's wrong or biologically something's wrong. So like, I'm not going to say I've never had my kids be bad. And for the most part, most kids are not, you know what I mean? They're just a product of their environments a lot of the times too. Yeah. You know what I'm seeing? That kind of thing. So, but I've heard people say, oh, when they're, you know, when they're throwing the fit, ignore them. Okay. I've done that with my kid as well. And I'll tell my kid, when you're done, first of all, just get out my face because I don't want to see you throwing the fit. So when you're done, we'll talk. You know what I mean? But that's that. Other times people say, no, you know, people will fight and fight and fight and fight. And all you're doing is exacerbating the situation more and more and more.
Yeah.
But they also say, oh, when your kid is also acting, doing bad stuff, not necessarily throwing a fit, like when I say with SVU, like doing bad things, just ignore it. They'll learn eventually that's not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, so reward when they do good things, ignore when they're doing bad things. I kind of feel like that may or may not work in every situation. I don't know.
Yes, I mean,
there are certain things you should be ignoring. You know what I mean? Like realistically.
Yes. There's a difference between ignoring and letting them express emotion. So when a kid is super emotionally high strung, humans, if we are emotionally high strung and we are angry and upset, like our emotional thing is up here, anything we're going to say or fight, it's not going to register. Yeah. They're in like they're in crisis mode. Let's talk about it. Okay.
Yes.
So we just have to let them process that emotion. Let humans, even as humans, like us adults, when I'm upset or angry, I don't want to talk to anybody. I want people to give me my space. I don't want people to talk. And I get that with kids too. Like give them the space, which does not mean ignoring them. Many of the kids that I've seen acting out, you know why they act out? Because they want the attention. They want the connection. And they realize the only way to get that attention or connection with someone is when they act out, because that is the best way to get someone's attention.
Because it doesn't matter, negative or positive, attention is attention. Someone's looking at me and talking to me.
So I always like the course of prevention. Like, let's not even go to the point. Let's try and work much before that. Before he gets to the state of throwing a tantrum. Again, why are we throwing a tantrum? If it's for attention, could we have given the attention much before you threw the tantrum? Like, what ways could we have changed that situation to avoid this from happening? I'm not saying this will never, ever happen. If this happens, we just have to let him or her go through those emotions and have a conversation. I mean, again, we're not going to ignore, I mean, we have to have a conversation with the child and saying, I understand you were super upset. You were angry about something, and I'm sorry you were angry about something, but I wanted to know what happened and what could we do together to make this different? How can we change this? Because it's not an effective situation. It's not a healthy situation here, right? So again, having a conversation, we call it a debrief afterwards, come back and what can we do as a preventative, as something before, so we don't see these explosive behaviors. And again, this is just for typical, normal kids, but if kids might have some more psychological issues where they need medical attention, they need help, which is beyond the scope of what we can do. They might need additional help. Right. But I'm talking about kids in general who, you know, are just seeking that. I wanted their attention, and this is the only way I can get them to listen to me. You know, and I'm talking about those situations.
Yeah, just the regular everyday situations, and some that might be special needs here and there. So from what you've experienced and working in the schools, what age do you think? I don't even want to, you know, try to speculate. You know what I mean? Like, depending upon this, there's such a big spectrum and such a big scope of issues that could be. I mean, kids are human, you know, everybody has their thoughts as to why certain kids, you know, and don't get me wrong. I mean, it may be when we were younger, it just wasn't talked about. I don't remember there being so many children with severe special needs, but maybe they just were other places. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, we now, when I look back as them as adults, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess.
It's definitely somewhere.
Maybe there was something a little off, but at the time it was like, just deal with it. You know, teachers dealt with it and parents just dealt with it. And they said, they'll be fine. And then they're in their 30s and 40s. And they're not so great, but it's just the way we're raised. So what age do you think should parents start to say, you know what? Regardless of whether or not they may think their kid has a special need, or they're just acting their age. So because, they're just acting their age. They're two, they're three, they're going to do that. I was the biggest culprit of it at times too. You know, he's just acting his age. And I'd be like, do other kids really do that? You know what I mean? Again, for what age do you think there should always be just a baseline of maybe there might be something, maybe they're not. Mm-hmm. And when would be the earliest that a parent might want to start seeking some type of intervention?
Yes, it's a good thing that you talked about that. It's so interesting. I never knew the word autism till I came to the US.
Exactly.
So, it was like, I was like, what is autism? I'm like, what is that? And I was like, it's so prevalent. I'm like, my goodness. And because I have never heard, and I went to a hugely highly, I had 60 kids in my class in India, and there's four grades. Like, there is first, say, 10th or 9th grade, there's four divisions. So there's 60 into four, 240 kids in each class. So imagine, I went from first to 12th grade, and I have not seen one special ed kid, any kid with autism, nothing. Okay, so I'm like, okay, where were all these kids? Again, it's a cultural thing, and I know when kids are different, or some kids are more severe, which is very obvious from a very young age of even 1 and 2. Parents keep them home or send them to, you know, because it's the shame and the guilt associated with it, which is unfortunate. But I feel like it's been a long time since I went back, but I know there are more resources and services now. Autism is more prevalent. I know there are behavior analysts in India as well. So it's grown as a field. But it's and now even pediatricians have all these markers that they use to see, to detect, and even schools. Like since I work in the school system, I know this very well, because teachers are very good to pick it out because they have other kids to compare it with. Like the struggle that, especially new time moms, I'm going to say parents, they don't have a baseline, like a person to compare.
There's no comparison.
Exactly. There's no comparison to levels. So I think mostly I've noticed when they start kindergarten, is when teachers actually, I've gone to class and I could easily the first 10 minutes to know which few kids need some kind of support. I won't know exactly what kind of diagnosis they have, but just based on how they behave and their communication and social skills, I would know that they need something. And so do the teachers, because they've worked so many years, they've seen the kids, and they know this kid is not in the developmental phase or cognitive level as these other kids, because it's a significant difference. I mean, obviously all kids have differences, this is a significant difference.
Obvious.
When you see it
in a group setting.
And then it's a conversation we usually call parents in. So at an early age, like I'm going to say preschool to kindergarten is when usually we figure out. So which is great. And even like autism can sometimes the more severe kids with autism, you can even pick it up as early. And I've heard like even like 6 months, like even like small that, things.
I know a few people. And then by the time they get to pre-K kindergarten, they're actually have had so much intervention.
Interventions, yes.
That they're able to be mainstreamed a lot of the time. If they catch it that early. Yes.
Yes. And the earlier the intervention, the better. I mean, because their brains are still developing. So we can do a lot of impactful changes when they're younger than when they're older. And it gets really, really hard. So yeah, for autism, for sure. But the other pieces, which are kind of like, they have something, we're not sure. So those, they just wait for a few years. Sometimes those kids catch up. Sometimes they don't. But by kindergarten, everyone is, you know, we know, kind of know, like, this is where they need to be. And they just, it's very simple. Just do a simple diagnosis and, you know, the assessments, and they find out if they need more support. And most parents are now more open to get that support. Yeah.
I want to switch gears. Because what you do is, again, so multifaceted. I mean, it all obviously ties in together, but it's so multifaceted. So one of the things I thought was interesting is that you say when it comes to, I kind of want to pivot to women's health and what you do for self-care, because all of that, we know, again, is super important in order to be a human being in general, but to be a productive human being, a productive parent, you need to be whole in yourself. And we know that that's all for all of us, a work in progress. And one thing I've said recently is we know it's not linear. It doesn't matter if you have kids or you don't, or you choose not to, whatever your life is, self-care is one of the most important things that you can do for yourself to be more productive in your own life. So one of the things I thought was interesting is you said you have a culturally sensitive approach. What exactly, I mean, in my own head, I could imagine what that means, but what exactly do you mean by that? And how do you use those? How do you use that to help up women?
Yeah. When I say culturally sensitive is talking about their beliefs and identity, because that's a core piece. Because when you're brought up a certain way, you have a certain identity.
And you don't have one. We think we do, or you don't have one.
That's true.
Trust me. Yeah.
It works both ways. Yes.
Yeah.
So when I work with women, I mean, obviously there's a surface level need, right? Like I want to lose weight. I want to be this. But when we talk more, it always comes down to what do you actually want? What is your identity? What is your beliefs? Mm-hmm. And what are your values? So basically the beliefs kind of confirm your experience. Belief, what we believe in is what we experience. And the more we experience that, it confirms our belief. So it's like reinforces that system. Right. But what happens is if it's not moving you towards where you want to go, because we've been conditioned a certain way, we've been conditioned to think that this is what we need. Yeah. And then awareness again, like it's not moving us towards what we want. So can we change our beliefs to move us towards those values, which is culturally, but when I say culture response, it's more also like trauma assumed. Like you have so much context, you have so many things going on. So let's start there. Because again, let's start there because it's something much more deeper. When you talk about women who come and like, I just have low energy. I want to lose weight. I feel like low confidence, always comes with kind of confidence, high stress levels, going to the root cause of what that is. And it's always so different, and being sensitive to those needs, because again, I've spoken a lot of women from different countries actually, and it's very different what their experiences and their beliefs are.
Yes.
So being mindful of that and helping them through that journey is important.
I think that's amazing because again, just like we talk about with children, us as people, our experiences shape who we are and who we turn into, you know, not to mention as women, and I can speak from this from personal experience, our bodies change in ways that are so traumatic. And I mean, traumatic, not even just dramatic. I mean, our bodies
change dramatic. Like
it's a traumatic experience, you know, when you go from one degree to the next and you're like, where did that come from? And it doesn't matter. I mean, kids exacerbate it, right? But I mean, even if you didn't have kids, your body is going to change with age. And there are things that we can't necessarily control. You could do the best things for your body. And there's still things that are going to happen, you know? And I always say this with that one-to-one. It took me a long time. It still takes me time to look in the mirror and go, you're doing what you need to do, you know, continue to do. Cause I mean, like in COVID, I gained a lot of weight. So I haven't felt comfortable in my own skin in a very, very long time, but I'm aware of that. And it's something that I actively try to work on, but we all have setbacks. I have setbacks all the time where I go, I shouldn't have drank that. I shouldn't have ate that. But then I wonder to myself, is that just because I feel guilt and shame about it? Or is it because I am allowing myself this one or two times?
Exactly.
You know, and I still have trouble navigating that thought process. Like, you go, okay, you're 41 and change. I'm like, you know, your body's not going to do what it needs to do to take care of this like it used to. Yeah. And then afterwards, I'm like, oh, why'd I do that? You feel the guilt, you feel the shame.
Yeah.
There's no pride in it. So you say to yourself, was that just because I was doing this emotionally? What was the need for this? Was it because I'm hormonal and I just wanted salt and sugar? Because we know that happens too.
Yeah.
So what do you think from personal, as well as what you've seen from other women, is one of the, and I wouldn't say one of the main causes, everybody's very different, but as we get older,
mm-hmm.
one of the main things, again, for me, a lot of it is emotional eating. A lot of it is that we just sat around on our asses really for 15, 20 hours a day during COVID. Yes. We weren't sitting on our asses working or sleeping. That was really it, you know, and most of us gained weight. But what do you think for most women when they get into their 40s is probably one of the most traumatic things that happens? Because I know for me, there's been a few that I'm like, and it's only been a couple of years. But it's like a shift, easy.
Definitely the weight, metabolism is not what it used to be. I can't have a tub. I can't even sniff the ice cream. I feel like if I sniff ice cream, it goes.
One of my kids eats a cookie. I gain the weight. It's
in the weight. Yes, definitely there. That and another big thing is stress. And I'm going to say stress because what happens when a body is stressed, in a constant state of stress, when we eat, we don't digest the food the way it should be digested. So that is a big, big, big thing.
That's good.
Right? Yeah. So that is a big thing. And then we can't do the work. Like when I had my first kid in my 20s, I used to do this Jillian Michaels workout, like this intense workout cardio. And I think in 6 months, I'm like, yeah, I look fine. It's like, I tried doing a workout and I'm like, no. I just looked at her and I'm like, no, I can't do this. I'm going to pass out.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. Yes. So our bodies are changing. And so one thing I tell, because when women come to me and say, like, I did this 5 years ago and it worked and it's not, and I'm not able to do it. What's wrong? I'm like, yeah, your body is changing. Let's embrace your body changing. But that doesn't mean there's no solution. There are different ways to address these problems. First, like I said, talk about is the, when we stress eat, like it's sort of emotionally eat. So what do we do when we're emotional? We go for the bag of chips or the tub of ice cream or the box of chocolate, right? When we're upset, and there's nothing wrong with that, but that what does that do? Because it gives you an immediate rush of dopamine, like you're immediately happy, right? For the 2 minutes,
that's it.
Happy, and it all comes crashing down. Now you feel even more miserable because you're first of all upset. Yep. And then you ate a bag of chips, but you did not want to. Yeah.
And then you're physically sick, by the way, because you can't eat the way you used to eat.
Yes. Yeah. We talk. So that's a conversation to have again. Like, okay, you are so down the dump. What can you do instead? Right? Maybe go for a walk. Maybe do some journaling. Maybe do something. I'll take deep, something to change that urge to go to something like a snack or something, because you have that emotional need to have that. What can we replace it with something which is more, because it honestly, at the end of the day, it makes you happy, right? I did the same thing, obviously. That's why I was on this journey. I love chocolate. So I always had a box of chocolate in my, obviously in my dresser, so it's easy access to it.
I had it in my desk drawer.
Yeah. So I'm saying, it's like, I just have to peel in and then watch SVU.
SVU.
And binge on chocolate and then cry for eating this chocolate and feel miserable. I'm like, this is not a sustainable, healthy lifestyle choice.
Right.
Now I do have, no, I, I'm not, I still have like a couple of dark chocolates. I've switched to a small bag, which is my pet peeve or whatever. I go for it, but I do journal. I love journaling.
Me too.
And I've just started, I don't know if it's an age. I'm not a very spiritual person, but my mom, my whole family is again to believe, like I've born in a very religious and spiritual family. So I like listening to talks about people. It's not about anything, like just about letting go, right? Faith. There's things beyond our control, how we right. just accept and surrender. Yes. You know, accept and surrender.
Like go and let God, that's what they say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's not a religious thing for me. And that calms me down.
Yeah.
Like those kind of practices calm me down. But now I also have like a bag of nuts. So these things are my alternate. And again, it looks different for different people. That's the thing. I'm not going to tell someone like, you need to listen to a spiritual leader talk. Okay.
Right.
I mean, right for me.
Right.
But you
what about like finding what makes you feel good, finding what yes, makes feel, you yes. feel more balanced.
Yes. And I tell people, don't go on these crazy fad diets. It's not sustainable. And I'm telling you, because I've been on Optivia, I've been on Weight Watchers. Yes, I've lost the weight, but within a few months, it's come back because I can't eat 700 calories throughout my life. You know, that's, and I feel miserable.
Yeah.
So we talk about changing relationship with food as simple as just having those, don't miss your meal because people are like, I'm not going to have breakfast. I'm just going straight to lunch. I'm going to skip meals. It's like, yeah. No, just have your three meals because what that does is your body is full. So you don't need the need for snacking. And okay. And the biggest thing is your body is the best infinite soul of wisdom. Mm. Like listen to your body. Just listen
love
to
that.
Your body.
Love that. Yeah.
More than any books, your body is your best book expert.
And just it's to learn it, right? Learn yeah. your body, learn the cues, learn the
cues.
Just because something is saying you're hungry, you may be not really hungry, right? Like that's just a brain cue. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. it could be drink something. I always say some nights for me, I'm like, oh man, I want something, you know, late at night or whatever. And I'm mm-hmm. like, no, have a glass of tea. Sometimes those yes. are suppressants. You know what I mean? Maybe I'm not yes. really hungry. Now, if something, I've woken up in the night randomly, just like really hungry. I'm like, that's not normal. That's weird. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And so it's just about listening and learning. You know what I mean? It's not an easy journey. And to lose it yeah. as you yeah. get older, gaining it, it takes nothing to gain it, but yeah. to lose it is unbelievable, you know, and it gains, you know, you gain it in different areas. You're looking at the mm-hmm. way all of a sudden, like I'm not a hippie person at all. And yeah. all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wait a second. There's a little hip there. Oh, that's nice. I'm like, I'm happy about that. But I'm like, but where did everything else come from? You know, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it takes time. So interestingly enough, one of the things that I think about is when I go back to when I was younger. Right. And I always say to myself, what would I've maybe if I'd have known then what I know now? What are some of the steps I may have taken? I can't say to avoid it. We can't avoid time. We can't avoid no. age. We can't avoid yeah. weight gain. None of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's just age and life. Right. But for me, I do think sometimes what are some of the things that I would, some self-care stuff. You know, I didn't wear mm-hmm. sunblock. That wasn't a thing, you know, when I have all my mm-hmm. freckles because of it. And, you know, there's just a lot of things that as you get older, you learn with more. So what is one of the things that if you can travel back in time and give your younger okay. self one piece of self-care advice, what would it be? And one thing that I always laugh about is that we're going to pretend that eyebrows were a thing back then too, because we know none of us had those either. So I think I would go back then and be like, yeah. don't touch your eyebrows, girl. You're going to need those in 20 years.
Yes.
And they don't come yes. back the same. So other than that, what is a piece of advice you think you would give your younger self?
Donna, that was my piece of advice. No,
I'm telling you, every woman would be, I looked at my graduation picture the other day and I was like,
yes.
what were you thinking? But that was the time. Yeah. And now I'm like, and they never go back the same. So
yeah, that's a great piece of advice. The other great piece of advice in addition to that is drinking more water. I mean,
oh
I know,
my God, yes.
Because that it seems like a no-brainer, but nobody does it. And I've been kind of bad about it because I never drank a lot of water growing up. And I completely regret it because now I can see my skin is a little scaly. I do suffer a little bit of eczema, but it also it dissolves all the toxins, so it flushes all your toxins away, yeah. makes you feel fuller, your skin looks better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, it's a simple thing. Everyone can do it. And the basic rule of thumb, I think it's half your body weight or something.
Yes. Yep, half your body weight.
Yeah.
Half
your body weight. So that's just a rule of thumb. Just, I mean, honestly, people who has never, ever had a sip of water, don't start with half your body weight. You might feel like you're going to die because you're so yes start slow
right.
but
yes
have work a goal of reaching there. Well, yeah, goal of reaching yeah. there, but yeah,
That's a fantastic.
I want to stick with that.
No, that's a fantastic one because I do think about that all the time. And again, you see memes online that go, we're sending our kids with these water bottles to school, these fancy water bottles. I don't remember, other than the water fountain in school, ever actually even drinking water. We drank everything else. I don't remember barely ever putting a bottle of water in my mouth or even having a bottle with me somewhere. Probably till about the past maybe 5-10 years that I'm like drinking more, and it becoming like, now for me, it's, I drink water. Like, I try to drink as close to a gallon of water a day as I can, because you know, but that's not for everybody. That's just because mentally it's like a challenge that I enjoy.
Yeah.
But that is a fantastic one, because I honestly don't think that any of us.
And just one more addition to that is, people are like, I don't like the taste of water. Obviously, the water doesn't taste.
A lot of people don't. Yeah.
So either there's other ways to get, I mean, people put electrolytes, people put whatever, you know, put a lemon wedge, put something to add some flavor to it if that's what you want. But drink water, you know, just drink water in some form or the other without making it too diluted with other stuff. But if you want some flavor, there's always other options to add on to it and still have that, you know, the quantity you need per day.
One thing, and I always tell my kids, they say ignorance is bliss. That's a catch-22. It really is. Because, you know, I've had stomach issues my whole life and stuff. And if I probably would have drank more water and avoided certain other things, that might have been mitigated a little bit, right? Yeah, and I tell my kids sometimes, they go, well, why do we have to drink so much water? Like, they'll drink juice sometimes. I'm like, have you had any water today? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I'm going to have some now. I'm like, listen, oh, my stomach hurts. Yeah, because you have, how much water have you been drinking? It helps keep you regular. It helps keep everything running smoothly. You know what?
Yes, constipation, stuff like that.
All of that stuff.
Keeps
parasites and all those things that we're ingesting constantly running through the way it's supposed to, you know, and not sticking into our, you know, and that's another one. That's a work of progress. I mean, but I think instilling it from when they're
young,
you know, my son, I don't think, oh my goodness. And I hate to say this because it makes me sound like I'm judging parents. I'm not, you know, every parent, I know with my daughter, I don't think that she wasn't very good with the water when she was younger at all. And that was a lot of our fault, because at the time I didn't drink a lot of water. I think Pepsi was like my main drink at the time. I was like 23. Okay. Pepsi was my main drink. I don't know how much I drank water when I did like exercise. That was it. Mm-hmm. Like throughout the day. And so she wasn't great about it either. It was juice. I never gave her soda, but it was juice, a lot of juice. Mm-hmm. And she had like, you know, teeth issues and things like that. And when it came to my son, at that point, I was a very different point in my life about 10 years later. And that became like his main drink, his go-to. I don't even think I let him have regular juice that wasn't watered down until he was like 6. And so now there's a lot of times he'll even prefer still water over juice.
That's awesome.
And so I'm like, you know, I think a lot of it is just trying to, sometimes I'll be like, I think you've had enough juice today. I know it tastes good, but put it back on some water. It's just one of those things I want them to cultivate as they get older, you know, and I think that's really.
Yes, for sure. I think,
So we're coming to the end, and I love talking to you. I think that what you're offering the world is amazing. And I love that we're able, and I say us as women who are trying to be more enlightened, more empowered, we're trying to do that for other women as well, because this journey, we always think, oh, I'm alone in this journey. Absolutely.
Yes.
Like when I look at certain things online, and you can relate to this. You see certain content and you go, oh my God, how am I feeling the same thing? Or how did that exact same thing happen? Or, you know, why did they do the same thing as me? And I'm like, yeah, we're all living the same lives. Just different nuances. We're all living the same life. You know, we're on the same globe and everything else and on the same wavelengths. And so it's really interesting. So this last question, I know I sent it to you ahead of time, so I don't know if you had a chance to look at it and prepare it, but I thought it was really cool when I was thinking about myself and how I handle certain experiences. And a lot of them for me is music and different soundtracks to different parts of my life to help get me through some of it. So if your coaching sessions had a soundtrack, what 3 songs, if you can't come up with 3, I'll take 1 or 2, would be on repeat to remind women of their power and the importance of self-care? And why do these tunes make you want to dance, have a good time? They may not be dance tracks, to be honest, but help you through your daily life.
Okay. I did have a couple and I forgot the first one, but I like the song Sunday Best. Have you heard it?
I know of it.
So it's an uplifting song, which talks about, you know, like, it doesn't matter what the day is, I'm always going to be my best. I'm going to look my best and feel the best. So I love that song. And the other one is the song about King and Queens.
Ava Max. That's one of my favorites too. I love it.
I love it. I found it very empowering. And I think it's a very inspiring and empowering song. So I love that in the form it's peppy. So those are my two go-to songs, I would say.
Ava Max, that's a good song, Kings and Queens. Yeah, because it's if all of the queens, if all the kings had their queens on a throne, they would pop champagne and raise it. That's right. Because that's what one of the things I say about this podcast is, my biggest goal is to empower women to realize that every woman is a queen in her own right.
Yeah.
And for all of the men in our lives to realize that, you know, they can be kings and kings elevate their queens. And how do we do that? You know, and, you know, someone like me who doesn't have a king in my life right now, which is fine. You know, a lot of us don't. But to know that we don't necessarily need to have that in our lives to
in
be
a life,
and fulfill our own lives appropriately. And it's something I think I work on every day and think. You as well, you know, work in progress, but doing amazing things.
Thank you.
So
I'm gonna say, I have the other song. I don't remember the name of the song, but it's like a new dawn, a new day, a new life. I love that song.
Yeah, it's an older. That's an older song. Yes.
It's amazing because it's always like you said, you're always taking one step at a time.
That's it.
A new dawn, a new day. So every day is a new day. So I love that song and I find it very inspiring too.
You know, if God gives us the chance to open our eyes another day, that gives us another chance to do better.
Exactly.
To learn to 2 feet on the floor is better than 6 feet under. That's kind of how I'm trying to live.
Oh, wow. I love that.
I'm trying to, you know, and for me, sometimes it's my two knees on the floor because, you know, you gotta have that whatever it is. You may not pray, I pray, but you know, to some people they may not, but whatever helps keep you grounded, get those knees on the floor. Yes. Thank the universe for giving you that time, regardless of, we know how hard it is, but that's how I see it. 2 feet on the floor is better than 6 feet under. So I think every day that gives us another chance to do better, to be better, and to, you know, if we need to cry and get it over with and keep moving.
Yes. I'm going to take that if that's okay with the
other. Oh, please do. Please do. I love it. I love it. Please do. Put it in big words, big letters.
Yes. Where,
reach you, see your information, see your stuff, work with you if they need to, where you know, all your information.
Sure. So I have a website, www.beingyoullc.com. So it's a double faceted website, talks about working with the kids, the processes that I use evidence-based practices, and also working with parents as well. So those are the things. For my health and life coaching, I do have a free giveaway. It's like the 8 ultimate guidelines to get to your dream weight. So it's just like eight basic strategies to get you started on moving towards the life, the look, feel fit, and look fabulous.
Love
life
that
you want. And if you go on that guidelines, I have a QR code and my email, and you can schedule a discovery call with me if you want to, or email me out and I can point you in the right direction if you need more resources. So
love that. And I'm also going to put your information under the show so people can reach you as well on all our podcasting sites. We all know that I am Teresa, ride or die from Teens Prosecco Queens. And you can either email me at Teresa Rosario. No, you can't. That's not the right email. At ProseccoQueensPodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on IG at Prosecco Queens Podcast, TikTok, Prosecco Queens Podcast. And this episode will be available on YouTube and all of its wonderful video glory at Prosecco Queens Podcast. Please like, share, follow, review, comment. Y'all know the deal. And Shadevi, thank you so much for being on with me. I truly appreciate it. I love your message. And I'm looking forward to speaking to you again, working with you as well.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this conversation as well.
Wonderful. Thank you.